We love the buzz on a Tuesday morning. He gives us all the good stuff because that's what he does at the Herald Sun, the main man there, and, of course, dominating on Fox Footy as well. John, good morning.
Hello, gentlemen. No, I don't give a rat's toss bag about the IPL either. I do care a lot about Maxi Gawn, though. I can't wait for that interview. Yeah, I hear it's fantastic. I just think 6 years ago, he played 39 mostly ordinary games. You know, he's a bit of a laughing stock. His team was a joke. And yet, you know, all those five All-Australians on, you know, he's one short of Dean Cox on six All-Australians. Of course, Dean had longevity, 290 games. But, you know, he could finish his career as the premiership captain, you know, potentially the greatest ruckman of the modern era, you know, clearly a future Hall of Famer. I just think, how do we regard him in 30 years from now? You know, there's a bit of Jimmy Steins in him. There's a bit of that, you know, that Robbie Flower, the bloke that, you know, that was so sacred at Melbourne. I just, you know, you guys have ridden that journey with him, and I just think about that transformation, a bit like Trent Cotchin, who, you know, yeah, was maligned, and then all of a sudden just became a premiership superstar. It's going to be great to listen to it, and we've loved his journey.
It's been great to be a part of it, I must admit. And he's, the one thing I do love about it is a bit of a teaser. It's the first time he really goes through the game, and it's been a chance to sit down and go through the moments in the game when we got him yesterday afternoon. So he'd been too busy celebrating and enjoying all that came with being a premiership player and a premiership captain. But he gets to reflect. You can almost hear him ticking over, his mind ticking over as he's telling the stories of reflection. So it's pretty cool to have a listen to. You'll hear that in about 20 minutes' time.
Look, and obviously, you know, so much has been made of Luke Jackson and how Max Gawn went to the bench in the third quarter and said, no, keep him on, he's got the hot hand. I mean, this is a bloke coming off five goals in a prelim. This is a guy who, you know, this is a selfish game. You want to get in there. You want to dominate. You want to put your stamp on the game. And so it just shows that brand of leadership for him, but also just how smart he is as a football person. Like, if you look back at those clearances from Luke Jackson, you know, it wasn't Nat Nui, you know, five-metre tap over the top to Shuey running into goal. He was scrounging. He was dirty. It was half a hand on it. But Luke Jackson was so instrumental just because of the presence he had in there. And, you know, for Maxi to be able to realise that, he might be a senior coach one day, Maxi. You never know.
Well, he's a premiership captain. Do whatever the hell he likes from here. Interesting, though, that same draft as Dustin Martin. Dustin Martin's played 100 more games.
Mm.
Got more flags in there, of course, but 100 more games. So he's had his challenges, Big Max, along the way with those knees early in his career. But he's become one of the megastars of the competition, Buzz. And there will be heaps of attention on Melbourne in the off-season, as there should be. But then it starts to look about how do they keep this list together now, Buzz, because they're talking dynasties at the moment.
They are. Amazing to think that they were actually having a crack at Adam Scherer, you know, a couple of weeks back. You think, how do they actually, you know, afford Cozzy Pickett when he comes out in 2 years, and Luke Jackson when he comes out next year, with, of course, you know, the West Australian pool. We always talk dynasties, but this list is so young. You know, even as I spoke to Glenn Bartlett yesterday, the former president, and he said, you know, we always felt like our window would be, you know, 2021 to 2024. So they'll sign up their coach, you know, over the off-season. And I think the best thing about it for Simon Goodwin is that, you know, he's got a bargaining position now. You know, he's got strength in those negotiations. And so, you know, you would think it would have been, even if they'd lost the grand final, a two-year extension through to 2024. But, you know, so many of these coaches these days, they have to accept six-month payouts or three-month payouts. They have to accept, you know, lesser salaries. And yet, you know, he absolutely will be able to demand whatever contract it is. You know, you think potentially even 3 years to 2025. So he absolutely deserves that. And we've seen so many teams which have slipped up from premierships, but you can't really see it happening for the Melbourne Football Club.
No. Well, not with the way that they played such a sustainable, trusted brand of football right throughout the course of the year. Just on Luke Jackson, Ralphie, you mentioned before that the fact he's from Perth, and the beneficiary was Melbourne of having a really poor year 2 years ago, because they finished that low in the ladder that they were able to secure him. I think we all thought at the time Melbourne weren't a 17th best team, and then they had the luxury of getting Jackson and Pickett with their two picks. It puts them in a pretty strong spot with Jackson, because clearly there will be a lure back home at some point. But he could be the hottest player in the competition in a couple of years' time.
Yeah, his manager, Jason Dover, you know, described him as a unicorn, you know,
that he is.
Can do all those kind of things. And I know it's an American term, but it's absolutely spot on, because he can play, you know, we just saw signs of it, you know, early in the year, that big strong mark that he'd take going forward, you thought he can do that. And then he'd get 18 possessions, you know, 15 of them contested, he can do that. You know, he can go behind the ball. I mean, there's nothing that he can't do. I mean, to think that as a ruckman, you know, look at Tom Hawkins, yeah, it took him 5 years to come good. And look at Nick Natanui, it took him a long time as well. To think that he's doing this in his 40-odd game, How do they phrase a contract for him? You know, is it going to be that 4 year at sort of, you know, no one's got massive money, but is he an $800,000 player by the end of next year? I mean, I think it's entirely possible. And you look at West Coast by then, you know, potentially the Nick Nat era will be almost over. Fremantle's always going to want to have a crack at him. You know, I'm sure he will stay. But, what's Cozzy Pickett like in 2 years? You know, he might be the Cyril Rioli writ large by then. So, look, it will be challenging for them to keep this team together like it has for so many. But you just hope with good leadership from people like Goody and for Max Gawn, like Richmond did, they'll want to hold firm for a couple of years and cash in. And then let's see what happens from there and whether some teams pick off some of their stars.
He doesn't play, Daniel, like a 199-centimetre player when he's playing as a forward. And there's been occasions this year where he's had 10 possessions in a quarter. Like, he does things that not normal 199-centimetre players do. And as Ralphie said, with Nat Nui coming towards the end, and a lot of clubs need a ruckman. Mm. So he's straight away, he's like a wicketkeeper to a cricket team. It's a specialised role, and there's a lack of them.
Well, speaking of rucks, we'll hear more about Melbourne with Big Maxie talks to us a little bit later on, Ralphie. The Bulldog situation on the weekend was one of the feature points of the game and one of the opportunities for the Ds to really gain ascendancy like they did through that second term and third term. And Tim English isn't signing a deal. What's going on with Tim English?
Well, he does want to stay at the football club, but I think, you know, given the fact he's just had a pretty poor year and, you know, he wants to monetise, you know, his worth, he'll get to the midway through next year and then he'll consider that contract. Now, his partner Rudy's back now, I think, in WA in the Super Netball competition. She's been in Queensland, so the long-distance relationship is not really an issue. But, you know, I think ideally he would have been in a position of power, played a great grand final, goes and signs a five-year, $5 million deal next year. But, you know, as David King suggested on Fox Footy, you know, is it something that might do to potentially consider shopping him? Look, I don't think that will happen, but they clearly need ruck cover. Sam Power, their list boss, has been looking for that. You know, there is talk around that they've already got someone. We just don't know who it is. Look, Peter Adams is someone who has been made, you know, very clear to the Dogs he's available to you. Now, they haven't escalated that interest yet. But look, the one for me that makes so much sense is John Segler. You know, he's 30 years old. The Dogs, he's not in the premiership window. The Hawks have not only their captain in Big Boy McAvoy, but also Ned Reeves. So they want to keep playing and showed some real interest. And Segler was on fire in the back end of the season. You know, winning contested possessions, good hit-outs to advantage rates. I just think he's the kind of player there that you can plug him in and play him. I know that, you know, Steph Martin is played manfully in the grand final, but he's 35 in November. You know, you can't trust his body. So, you know, for the Western Bulldogs, I don't think anyone feels they're going to fall off the perch in regards to their premiership aspirations. But they absolutely need to trade some draft collateral from next year. And I just think that Segler's one that makes a heck of a lot of sense, if not Peter Adams.
Are there any other rucks going around?
There are, but they're not, you know, they're Mason Cox types, they're Levi Casbolt types, they're sort of Billy Frampton types. There's been a bit of discussion around about Matt Flynn, who's probably third in the pecking order at GWS. You know, so there are types that, you know.
Well, the buzz.
He's got a call.
Port Adelaide have asked him not to talk too much about Peter Adams.
While we get Ralphie back up, the interesting thing is that the ruckmen that are available are not number one ruckman. And there are clubs that need a number one ruckman that are in the windows. I still reckon Geelong, Bulldogs. You can go and get a number two or a number three from another club that's not necessarily at the top. Is that really going to help them? It's almost like you got to get the main man.
But if there's not a lot of main men, then how do you... You've got to come up with something, don't you, Buzz?
Yeah, you do. Sorry about that. They haven't got a lot of draft collateral this year because they'll use up all of their points. They're already in deficit for Sam Darcy. But they still believe in Tim English. You know, they still believe in him in terms of a career progression. Yeah, I mean, have you guys seen enough to condemn him or to feel like he just needs more time before he becomes a legitimate centre square ruckman?
I can't see the centre square ruckman thing, I must admit, with Tim. I think he's a really good mobile key position target. But I just can't see him being a force in the ruck.
Is it because it's almost a personality thing that he hasn't got the aggression? He's just a nice player and needs to be more aggressive to be a dominant ruckman? Because he's 207 centimetres.
He's a massive man.
I know.
He should be better.
And he also moves like a Luke Jackson at 199.
He should be more capable. Watching him step onto the scene, Buzz, I mean, he should be more capable than he is in that area. Whether or not he has not getting the the support developmentally. Now, I'd be surprised by that. Or whether it is a personality issue where it's just not really for him and he just doesn't want to do it like other guys do it.
Yeah, it's a bit of that Josh Sackey thing, the competitiveness.
Yeah, I think. You
know, some insiders at the Bulldogs would say he's a really good centre square ruckman, and the stats would show that. But around the ground, he gets manhandled by the bigger, stronger types. But Luke Jackson this year, quite often, refused to even play him in the centre square there. Now, they have got another unicorn coming in. Now, Sam Darcy, as one recruiter said to me, he's 204 centimetres. He moves like Ben and Max King. He can play centre half back. He can play forward. He's going to be a megastar. But unfortunately for the Dogs, it's probably, after 4 or 5 years of development. So, so he doesn't fix their issues right now. Oh, I get a heavy concussion too from his teammate in Aaron Norton. You just never quite know, how much that one knocked him around. But if they went into next year's campaign with the two ruckmen they have right now, I think we'd have the same doubts that we had on them, when they played Lewis Young as a ruckman of all things in a elimination final.
See, I feel half and Ralphie that the Bulldogs have the opportunity to be a bit bold because of the way that they're able to get Yugal Hagen and the way that they're going to get Darcy, not naturally getting a really high draft pick, that maybe they can trade their picks. Or do something.
They don't have any picks, though.
Well, do
next year's picks.
That's right. And then put a good player as well as part of the package. Do something bold to try and get a really good ruckman. Because they were exposed. I mean, it is Gorn and Jackson, a great combination. But with the midfield that they've got, do they need a ruckman, a quality ruckman, to service that midfield better? Or are we overstating that at the Bulldogs?
Yeah, and, bold decisions would be you go out and have a crack at Nick Bryan, who's the second ruckman at Essendon, who's got massive potential. Or, back in the day, you would have had a crack at Ivan Solder. You say, OK, well, let's offer him 5 years. I know he's just re-signed, but they've already got Dan Curvis there at Richmond, and I know they've lost Callum Coleman-Jones. Now, back in the day, that's just what you did. The clubs have got such strategic and such methodical list management now. I know that's not what Sam Power does. You just go out and get him, but... Yeah, they have to do something, don't they?
Well, I was thinking more about boldness of jagging a Darcy out of Freo or a bona fide star ruckman and saying, hey, we'll give you a really good midfielder, a first-round draft pick and something else because we know we've got Yugal Hagen and we've got Darcy coming in. I'm more that way of...
All right. What about a bloke called Brody Grundy?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Now, I know that's probably preposterous. I know he's on $1 million a year. It's unlikely that they could fit him in, but they're the kind of things, as I say, back in the 80s, that you'd say, no, we believe that Brody Grundy's a great tack ruckman and he's another midfielder. If they went into the season next year with Brody Grundy there, I think we'd all say that the premiership favourites, even though it's unlikely to happen from a salary cap point of view.
Right, so that's the losers, and we'll speak to the winners with Maxie after this. What about the time slot, Buzz? Because Gillen, the chief, if you don't know who he is, he's the chief of the AFL, said the twilight fixture in Perth was spectacular, was the word he used. Is this what we're going to see going forward?
Well, I don't think we're going to see a night slot on the eastern seaboard. Look, I think in his heart of heart, Gillen McLachlan would really like to see a 2:30 grand final in Melbourne. He wants to retain the traditional element. He wants to bring it back to those fans who have, those members who have signed up, 1 million of them across the country, and effectively, haven't even been able to watch football in most of the states. So I think we probably get to a compromise position in the end. I think that 4 o'clock grand final time, by the time it's September, it's about, 5:40, which is almost on dark. And so at halftime, you can have that spectacular. I was sort of tapping away, so I didn't see the halftime spectacular, but everyone suggested it was fantastic, right. From dusk leading into dark. Those of us who are traditionalists who hate the night grand final, we still have to look at the ratings and you think there's 4 million people watching. So I think the question that for me is that, so the extra 400 people we get in Sydney in a night game compared to a day game, do we care about them? Are they just theatre goers, like us who might watch a Melbourne Storm game once a year? Or are they people who actually we might be able to convert and it's really important that we get those extra 400,000? I don't know the answer to that, but I think that's what the AFL would be asking themselves.
But in the end, though, Buzz, it's one game for the year. Now, clearly it's the biggest one. We all understand that. But surely you're not changing the whole fabric of the competition and the history for 200,000 or 400,000 people watching in Sydney once a year.
Well, we've already changed it twice, though. And you know, what Tony Cochran would say, OK, we only played one game that was a grand final in Brisbane, and we got, you know, we've got 300,000 extra people who are playing football. We've got massive revenue in from that. We've got infrastructure. We've been able to steal some grounds away from, you know, the NRL. You know, what we.
But that's not what it's about. If the night debate is about television and television only.
Yeah, and so
the
game can be significant. But so I agree. So my point on that those extra 400,000 is that, look, if they're just theatre goers, if they're just people who turned on the TV for 20 minutes and said that's interesting and went back to the NRL, we don't really care. I'm not sure how you measure the metrics for those people from a one-off game. Mm. When I think you and I would probably feel like, yeah, they're theatre goers. Let's do what's right for the AFL and the AFL's heartland clubs and the expansion clubs who are going to watch it, whether it's at 4 o'clock or it's at 5:40.
We'll see. Maybe next year we just get back to normal if we can and see where it goes from there. Hey, what about this vaccine situation, Buzz? I'm intrigued by this because the NBL last week had a couple of situations where some import players decided they wouldn't want to be vaccinated, so they've ended their time with their clubs, the New Zealand Breakers and the Wollongong Hawks, I think it was. Or was it Illawarra? Illawarra Hawks, it was. What's going on from an AFL perspective? Is there going to be mandates or are they just going to let it sort of ride for a bit?
Well, it certainly won't be a mandate from the AFL's perspective. You know, they're really strongly suggesting that the clubs take a leadership role. And I see it even with the Brooklyn Nets at the moment. You know, Kyrie Irving, who's one of the megastars of the world, he's not being specific about his mandate, his vaccine status. And there's some talk that he wouldn't be able to play home games with Brooklyn, but he might be able to play away games.
Yeah.
It's insane, really. So, look, I asked a couple of chief executives yesterday what might happen if a player decides to put his hand up and just refuse to be vaccinated. And then, like, it's just unforeseen. Like, we think, would they be able to step out a year? Would they be able to, you know, be tested daily? And if it is that they get COVID, you know, you're out for 2 weeks, whereas those that do get COVID with double vaccination might potentially be able to have, 5 days out and a couple of negative tests and then get back. What clubs are suggesting right now is that we just say, if you're not vaccinated, you're not coming back to the pre-season. You know, a really hard-line status. And as they say, it's not about the individual's choice. It's about protecting our entire workforce in regards to occupational health and safety. Virgin Airlines has said to me that, you know, we're not going to mandate vaccines. So, you know, players would be able to travel, but would that team be able to get a dispensation, you know, an exemption to actually travel in there? And so the AFL is just going to push a really hard-line stance. They're going to hope that the vaccine mandate isn't required. But, look, with a population of an AFL population of 800, I'm sure there's going to be a player who's going to stick his hand up and say, I'm just not prepared to be vaccinated.
Oh, I guarantee you that'll happen. And so who knows where that conversation goes from there. And just on the Kyrie Irving NBA thing, there's a great piece in Rolling Stone magazine this month on it, a real long-form, old-school long-form journalistic piece on that. They've done some great background on it, and the situation they face is very, very interesting. And led by some of the stars of the game, as you say, Buzz, with Kyrie Irving and a few others getting involved in those shenanigans. So it's a fascinating byplay all across the globe.
Well, a lot of it is more I reckon it's more complicated in America, in American sports, where a lot of them are more religious than what they would be potentially in Australian football, where that sort of stuff comes into play as to what they're prepared to do to their bodies and all that sort of stuff, which I reckon could become a more complicated issue in, say, American sport than would be the case with Australian sport.
Mm. Yeah, just to give you an example of why some potentially won't be vaccinated. So one of the clubs, which has got a really high vaccination rate already, they went to one of these people and they said, I'm not prepared to get vaccinated. And they said, why? They said, well, you know, my grandmother had AstraZeneca and she had a reaction to it, the blood clot, and she passed away. And so, you know, I think all of us who are pushing hard for people to get vaccinated look at that and go, well, I can understand why you wouldn't be vaccinated. And so, look, it may well be that the AFL forms a special medical panel that has, you know, a half a dozen exemptions, you know, a couple for religious reasons, a couple for others. It would make it harder for that team, as I say, to operate it. You know, the person would need daily testing. You know, when they are interstate, they might have to be locked into a hotel room. And that's one of the things in the NBA, in the NFL. You know, if you're on the road, which they are a lot more than our guys, yeah, you can't fraternise with people, you can't mingle with fans, you can't be out at restaurants. And so I think the hope is that people will do it for the right reason, but there will be, you know, outriders, and it'll be a fascinating case study for us.
Have a chat to Nicki Minaj, his cousin's best friend. He's had some challenges through the last little while. Buzz, nice to chat. Look forward to hearing you on the Tuesday Hacks a little bit later on.
Thanks, guys.